Hello and welcome to The Indoorsman, your podcast guide to the great indoors. I am your host, Matt.
And I'm Cliff.
And we are here to talk to you. Well, mostly to each other. And we're letting you listen because we're just that generous.
Yeah.
Hey, Cliff, what have you been up to?
I finished Red Dead Redemption 2.
What?
And when I say finished, I completed all the story. Yeah.
I definitely haven't done that. I have not really even scratched the surface. I'm pretty sure there's still game mechanics I haven't unlocked at this stage.
Probably, yeah. Because game mechanics unlock a long way in.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the thing I was doing? I think the last big story mission I did was... Oh, I just started a mission where Bill and the blonde woman wanted to go rob the bank or something.
You are barely into the game.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But how did you find it overall?
Despite the Rockstar nature of the control setup, which just is not... There's no finesse to it at all. It's... Yeah. Despite that, fucking amazing game. I absolutely loved it.
Okay, that's good. From what I've played and from what I've read... The game is kind of working at cross purposes with itself in a lot of ways. It's beautiful, it's huge, it's detailed, the mechanics are intricate, the balls grow and shrink, but it's still very Rockstar in that Arthur just intrinsically knows that there's a map marker somewhere off in the distance he has to go to incidentally run into someone. And yeah, the controls, which are just dog shit.
They're great if you don't have to do a fine adjustment. If you have to do a fine adjustment, it's shit. If you don't have to do a fine adjustment, it's perfect. You don't even notice it.
I do know from reading, not from experiencing, the sort of challenges you do to upgrade your skills outside of just everyday use. One of them for the horse riding is basically running a diagonal across the entire map within 17 minutes, which, because of the controls, means 17 minutes of just tapping the X button constantly. And I hate it. But I will keep playing it. I'm hoping they add in like alternate control schemes because that's RSI waiting to happen.
Oh man, you want to talk about RSI? Try catching a legendary fish. My thumb thought it was going to cramp.
I'm not doing that.
Hey, it's a mission.
Is it a mission or is it a side mission?
Well, it's a side quest. It's a stranger mission.
Then it can get fucked.
But it leads to like a really kind of great mission. So my advice is do it. Yeah.
Well,
it was just annoying.
Yeah. It's like, it's a great game, but just bits of it are very annoying.
Like it was like Spider-Man. Like bits of Spider-Man fucking infuriated me. But overall, I loved the shit out of that game.
The research station stuff in general was kind of crap.
See, I didn't mind that. It was the bit that I had the biggest problem was again, like when I wanted to get to that exact one spot and I'd have that spot highlighted as my like grapple point and then I'd go to grapple and then it would instantly change to something else and I'd grapple sideways.
I really didn't have that problem. I think you're just bad.
No, I had a bunch of that when I was doing like, when I wanted to get like Taskmaster stuff down and when I wanted to do specific movements, I would just like, it would not latch onto the one I wanted.
No, I think you're just bad at video games.
Now, other people I've talked to have had the same issues with the like those spots not playing nice at key times.
No, but, I think you're just all bad at video games.
No, that's not true. So like, yeah, I finished the story. You have the main part of the story where you play Arthur's tale, and then of course because we know that John's in this, there's not a spoiler at all. John's wife and John and his son all survive. Survive the game. All right. I mean, like they're in Red Dead 1, which we know is takes place after, so that's not a spoiler. We know that that's a thing.
Right.
So what they do then is once you finish the main story, you play two epilogues, part 1 and 2, and that gets John from the ending of the main sort of story to where he needs to be for the start of Red Dead 1.
Okay.
So you play some John time.
I don't want to know that. That's a spoiler, Cliff.
That's not a spoiler.
It is a spoiler. I didn't know that.
No, it's like an epilogue. It's after main stuff. It's more like a side quest, a glorified side quest than anything. Like, trust me, it's a glorified side quest.
Okay.
But and so you play that, and it's just like a little, like I said, it literally is just a little like, how do we get John to where he kind of needs to be? It was almost like they thought, shit, we've got a wicked, like, awesome story, but then how do we bridge that gap?
Crap. Which you don't even need to do. Like, it's fine.
I think they felt like they might have needed to do it. Mm-hmm. As a bit of, like, fan service at the same time.
I guess. Isn't it enough fan service to be going back in time to the before times anyway?
Well, yeah. So, you play that afterwards as well, which is not very long at all. And you have a bit of fun with it. And there's a couple of, like, fun missions there. But yeah. So, I did that. But, yeah, the main story bit is the bit that's the actual, like, meat and potatoes of this game, for sure.
Yeah.
And its ending is amazing. And there are, of course, multiple endings. So, depending on how you go through the world, you can reach multiple outcomes.
Oh, right. Like, with the honor system?
Yeah. So, you can kind of get, like, three kind of endings out of it. You get
good, bad, and neutral?
Yeah. So, your neutral is not, like... It kind of branches in a weird way where you choose your neutral, if you want to go neutral or not, and then it kind of ends at good or bad, depending on how you, if you choose not neutral, it goes then good or bad. It's like a weird thing, but it works. I sat there and watched the other endings after I got my ending, and it worked. The way they've set it up, it works, and it works well. All the story wraps up very well in each situation, so it's good.
Good to know.
Yeah.
When I get to the end of the game in about 6 years, I'll keep that in mind.
Mm. But, yeah, it's pretty great. What I would recommend is doing as much of the side content you can before you go into the end of the game, just because it gets a bit like... I had a few quests that just kind of disappeared afterwards. Okay. So, yeah, do all the stuff you want to do beforehand, just to make sure you've got it.
Do you get the warning that you usually get in games, like you're going into the end game, get shit done?
No. So what I found out from people that had finished it and said that it's okay, like you can pick up afterwards, because all these games you can kind of pick up afterwards. Right. So that's cool. Okay. But you don't pick up all afterwards. It seems like you kind of get like a big chunk of it stays the same. I had to repeat a strange mission, for example, and start it again.
Gross.
So it kind of does this weird half reset. I don't know how it's supposed to work. One mission that I'm pretty sure has disappeared forever for me now.
I don't like that. Like, it's become such a mainstay in these kind of open world games to give, like, a very blatant, whether it's in character or just, like, a prompt saying, you're going into the end game, go do shit.
Yeah.
Because you might lose some of it.
And I think that the idea was you're not supposed to lose any of it, but one mission, like I said, one mission for me definitely disappeared. And admittedly, it wasn't a mission that I really wanted to do, but me being like a crazy, like, open world, like, anytime I see something, I kind of want to do it.
Yeah.
That annoyed me a bit.
Fair.
But yeah, like, you get to play, like, in the full open world with, like, basically go nuts afterwards, do whatever you want. And yeah. So you get your little, you know, you get to play your story, and then you effectively play, like, a glorified post-credits John set up, and then you get to go on your way and do whatever you want.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've done like a tiny bit of Red Dead, but really not much at all. Instead, I've been focusing my
Hitman 2.
No.
Oh.
My energy on Spyro Reignited Trilogy, which is amazing. It is gorgeous. It plays perfectly, just like the originals felt. They've not just like upscaled the graphics, they've actually reinvented some of the worlds.
Well, I mean, they had like 4 polygons back in the day, so now they've got, you know, at least 3 times that many.
At least 3 times. Yeah. But it's not like they've just like up-res the models and added details to them. Some of the worlds, they've actually given them like a complete visual makeover to stick better to their themes and stuff.
Because they kind of had to, because they didn't just, it was all just like, here's a couple of colors that were like made up the world back in those days, so they had to fully go through, and the worlds look very pretty. Like, everything looks pretty in that game.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I sat here on Sunday with my dating person because he played Spyro as a kid and wanted to go back into it. He's not a gamer. The last major game that he played was RuneScape. So, tracking back a little bit. But he knew Spyro, so we sat there playing it for an entire day. Well, mostly him, but then when it got hard, he'd just hand over the controls, like, do the hard bit. I'm like, all right, cool.
There are so many innuendos in this last, like, 2 minutes. It's not even funny.
Hmm?
There are so many innuendos in everything you just said. It's amazing.
Reading so much into it. I'm a good chaste Christian boy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was great because I love playing games with these sort of enthusiastic non-gamer types because it's like, do you want me to help you with this bit? It's like, no, because I know you'll get it right. It's like, okay. So yeah, a lot of time with that. I was quite impressed. In the space of a day, he pretty much finished Spyro 1. So I'm now replaying that on my save because I didn't let him touch my save because you can have the key to my heart, but not to my save games.
Yeah, but like, yeah, I love you dearly, but just nah. Your hands off my goods.
We're not doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm replaying that at the same time. Having sort of watched him play it or not watched him play it or played bits of it for him, and I'm like, I'll work through it because I want to play the games in order. Like, I've done one level in all three games just to get a look at them, but yeah. Also, it's interesting, like, they redesigned all the dragons that you free in the first game, so they're all, like, just recolors of the same model in the original, I think. Or maybe there was, like, two or three different models. But here, every single one of them has a unique character. Like, one might have paints in an easel, one's using magic to, like, float cards around, one looks like a professor, and when he flicks open his wings, they look like a chalkboard with drawings all over them. And then they all have unique animations and stuff.
They really, like, played into and went nuts with their kind of the personalities that they had just based on the voice acting and stuff. And they just went and went nuts.
They've re-recorded all the lines, but a lot of them are just like, thanks for helping me, Spyro, or, you know, giving really generic hints like, you can combine your charge attack with your jump, or whatever. But yeah, just like this extra layer of attention to detail. And they sort of say their little thing, and then they turn golden and sort of take off and vanish. So they've added lots of little details there. So like the one with the easel and the paintbrushes, as he's sort of glowing to fly away, he sort of flicks out his wings and knocks over his easel, so as he's teleporting away you see him reaching for the easel to try and stop it from hitting the ground. It's just a lot of like little character flourishes that I really appreciated. Yeah, so I'm really, really, really enjoying that. The other game that I've also been playing, like, more than I thought I would of, is Pokemon Let's Go! Eevee version, because Pikachu can get fucked.
I have no strong feelings either way. Eevee's a better choice because, well, normally Eevee would be a better choice, but you can't evolve them?
You can't. The partner Pokemon can't evolve. But Eevee's still the better choice. So, because you have to keep them in your party, I think you have to, because they're right around your head no matter what. They can learn specialized moves to give them more type, like, options. So, like, there's a little trainer that can teach you, like, I think it's like a fire, a water, and a ground move for Pikachu. But Eevee has one that ties to every type of his evolutions. So, and they've all got dumb names, like Sizzly Sizzle or Darky Dark or something. But yeah, so, and they are ridiculously powerful. I'm really enjoying it. Like, it's an upscale of Pokemon Blue, Red and Blue. Everything's laid out the same, so you just sort of intrinsically know where to go. But yeah, there's just little bits and pieces over there that make it a little bit different. The Go style capture takes some getting used to, because it's not got to catch them all. It's now got to catch all of them, because there's a mini game that's unlocked by catching, I think it's 50 of the same Pokemon in the park or something.
So do you level them up the same way as Go?
No, you catch them, and they do show like a combat power or whatever the CP stands for in Go, but then you sort of fight and level the same way you normally do.
Gotcha, right.
But it just sort of gives that comparative CP value. So anyone who's coming to a Pokemon mainline game, or, you know, mainline for the first time since Go came out, they have that kind of through line for how to know how a Pokemon is strong, I guess.
In the past, they've had all the, like, they've had the hidden values and all that sort of shit.
Oh, the EV and IV stuff is still in there.
Yeah, and that is possibly the most annoying part of it, because you can work all that out, but it's tedious, boring shit.
They've actually added some stuff in there. There's a thing you can unlock. You find one of Professor Oak's assistants after you've caught, I think it's 100 Pokemon. That's 100 Pokemon, not 100 types of Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And he unlocks a feature in your Pokedex called Judge, which is basically an IV revealer for whichever
Pokemon. I think there was one a while ago when I was actually like bothering to do that stuff. And it was
X or Y, or RS had them, I think.
Yeah, and it was, again, it's tedious. Just make it transparent. Yeah.
I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, just catching Pokemon that I like.
For the people that are interested in it, like, why hide it? Because they can find it out anyway. You're just making them jump through hoops for like stupid reasons. Yeah. You're already making them jump through hoops because you have to breed them if you want to be competitive. Mm-hmm. So like, why add extra tedium to that?
Yeah. But I'm enjoying it so far. I just got up to the SSN, so I'm making a decent time. I'm just really enjoying it. Like, the capture mechanic does speed things up a lot, because you still get experience for your entire party by catching a Pokemon. Not a huge amount, but yeah, it kind of keeps things moving without having the random battles to rely on.
I actually quite like the catching mechanic from Go. I thought it was good. It was interesting. It felt like you were catching something instead of just like hitting a button and waiting for like the RNG to go.
Yeah. This one as well, like, because there's the different controller options, you can sort of use the Joy-Cons or have it in handheld mode. Everyone thought you had to use Joy-Cons with the flick controls. You don't. Mm-hmm. You can have it sort of in handheld mode with the controllers attached. And when you throw the Pokeballs, you just sort of use the accelerometers to aim the center of the screen, and that's where it throws the Pokeball.
Right, okay.
So the Pokemon might move like AR style kind of around you. So you might have to turn a bit, but it's just like aim for the center of the screen, throw it, try and get it when the ring is real small. It's got a touchscreen,
all right?
Yes, it does, but they don't use it.
I mean, using a mechanic that's on a touchscreen device, don't use the touchscreen as an option.
Yeah. It's an odd choice. Seems
pretty lazy.
Especially when it's exactly how Go works.
Yeah, because I hate using those, like, the, like, no one can see what I'm doing, but, like, the rotating around with your fucking hands. I hate that shit. I just want it to be, like, I move the stick or I, like, can draw on the screen to, like, tell it where I want it to go.
Yeah.
I hate having to, like, I hated the Wiimote for that stuff. Like, playing Mario Kart with that stuff. Horrible. Mm. Now, I know that the new stuff is like way more accurate and it's a lot nicer to use, but it's still shit.
Yeah. So in a way, I'm kind of glad that they don't do the touchscreen stuff, because I feel like I'm more in control with the accelerometer.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, the problem I have with Go is, I don't know if I'm just not coordinated or what, but the flicking never felt right. Like, it never felt it was going the right amount of distance. So just having it automatically aim for the center of the screen, I feel like I'm actually finessing it rather than just hoping for the best.
I think you're just terrible at video games.
Maybe. That stupid thing where you have to spin the Pokeball to get a curveball in Pokemon Go can go fuck itself.
I mean, I had no problem with it. It was just spin, go.
Just never goes where I want it to. I hate it.
It seems weird to leave that out when it was already in as an established thing and you've got the touchscreen. Anyway, but is it... Does it bring anything really new and interesting to Pokemon, or is it just an upscaled version of Red Blue with Pokemon Go in it?
I'm not far enough in to really make a judgment on that. I know a lot of the end game stuff adds length to the game and stuff, and I've been trying not to read too much in case there is any big reveal. Like, there's not going to be a Johto region or anything like that, but there might be something cool.
You're going to buy that next year.
I'd be okay with that, to be honest.
That's the fucking problem.
Yeah. Next year, we'll get the new Pokemon Switch game, though, so...
Which, that knows? Is what I'm keeping an eye on, because I want that to be a different Pokemon game.
Yeah. I don't know, like, the visual quality is, like, a tick up even from sort of XY Aris generations. So I did enjoy the little details to the character models and stuff. Also, being able to have literally every Pokemon in the game follow you around is amazing. Because they all have their own unique little animations. Some of them run behind you, some of them run next to you, some of them run ahead.
So, I mean, that's stuff that we've wanted since, like, Pokemon Yellow. It's like we wanted to be followed around by our favourite Pokemon.
So I've been purposely running around with a Magikarp following me, just kind of flip-flopping. Occasionally he goes to smell flowers or find an item for me, which is nice. But
do you just scream, like, hit him with a splash attack, like, every 3 seconds? Because I would...
Literally never used him in battle. I'm just waiting for him to turn into Gyarados so that I can have him follow me around. That's the important thing.
I'm not talking about in battle. I'm just talking about in general. I'd just be walking along like there's a bystander on the side of the road. I'd just scream, like, hit him with a splash attack and then just watch Magikarp flounder.
I'm pretty sure his method of movement is using splash. So it's kind of ingrained. Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I wasn't sure if I'd sort of start this and then put it aside, but I think I might actually finish it, which is cool. So yeah, that's what I've been playing. I have also been watching one good show, and I tried to watch one bad show, because Netflix. Do you want the good show or the bad show first?
Let's get bad.
Okay, so there is a cartoon that has been added to Netflix called Super Drags, which is superhero drag queens.
I was going to say, it's a Hot Wheels racing game.
Yes. Yeah. It's drag queens, superheroes, and they were advertising it because some of the stars of RuPaul's Drag Race were playing the main characters. I didn't realize, but it's a Spanish show that's been dubbed over. I thought it was, like, made for this production, but then you see kind of the Sailor Moon style accelerated lines of dialogue to fit the mouth flaps, which is not great. Also, the show is not great.
What do you expect from, like, a cartoon that's been bought and then dubbed over by, like, crappy reality TV stars?
Crappy, how dare you? It's just
reality TV is junk.
It's crass, but not smart crass. Gotcha. It's just awful. I watched half an episode and then I gave up on it, so fuck that show. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend the other day, and apparently none of the drag queens who starred in it made any kind of fanfare on social media when it was released, because I think they all realized that it was garbage.
Just took the paycheck and went on with their lives.
Yeah. Shangela got to get paid. So set that aside. Gave it a thumbs down on Netflix, because that's who I am. The good show I've been watching, though, is She-Ra.
I haven't watched any of it, but people have been like really going hard about how like great it is.
It is so good. I wasn't sure because I never really had an interest in He-Man or She-Ra, the original series, so didn't have that kind of retro connection to pull me in. But everyone sort of complained about the animation style and how she's like, her new costume, instead of being like a mini skirt and a corset, is like a reasonable top and bike shorts, essentially. It's like, she looks like a boy, whatever. But it's so good.
Except like, I've seen like shots of it, and she does not look like a boy.
No, she doesn't. She's an 8 foot tall Amazon woman in bike shorts. But where She-Ra, the original cartoon, from everything I've been able to tell, every female character had the same body type, just with different sort of coats of paint and add-ons over the top.
This one's different. It was essentially they have brown hair instead of blonde hair.
Yeah. A green corset instead of a red corset, that kind of stuff. It's because they were modeled that way to sell toys. So
and like cheap as fuck to produce.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So now they've got wildly diverse character models and designs. They've also diversified the races. And additionally, the show is queer as shit. Like, it's officially called She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, because it's all these magically powered princesses who come together to fight the big bad. And so, yeah, like, there's two of them that are definitely dating, and it's implied that a lot of other couples are formed there. There's a princess prom where they all go in couples. And also, it's just so good. Like, intelligent. The voice cast is excellent. Like, you're bound to hear at least six different voices you recognize from other cartoons and stuff. The one I picked out after a while was the character Stevonnie from Steven Universe is the big bad. Because I knew the kind of scratchy female voice and I couldn't place it for a while, and I was like, oh, now I get it, and I love it more.
Is there a voice from, like, you know, the person that did, like, Phil and Little from Rugrats?
Or Susie from Rugrats? I can't say I spotted that one, no.
Because that person's in, whoever they are, I don't know who they are, does voices in everything.
Then probably, I may just not recognize it. Yeah, but I'm really enjoying it. It's only 13 episodes for the season or something, but I know it's already been renewed for a second season, which I'm very glad about, because it's really good, and I want to watch more of it. So that's what I've been doing.
I barely watch cartoons anymore. I watch, like, Rick and Morty, and then go back and watch Futurama, because that shit's awesome.
Well, I recommend giving it a try. It's interesting because, you know, it was very much like a serious series originally. you know, fighting for honor and all that stuff. And here she gets a magic sword that turns her into She-Ra, and then she's like, I don't know how this works, and it's scary.
That's a very modern, like, take on stuff, though, is the whole, like, I'm kind of, like, this adorable, like, idiot when it comes to, like, who I am and what I am.
Yeah, they play up a lot of it because, I don't know if it's the same as in the original series, but Adora, who becomes She-Ra, she, in this, was working for the bad guys in Flushing, Queens, till her boyfriend kicked her out in one of those crushing scenes. She, like, falls out of a ship or something, gets rescued by the princesses, and realizes, like, oh, life is better when you're allowed to have fun and friends.
It's a story as old as time. You fall out of a ship and become a princess.
Yep. The princess of power. Mm-hmm. So they make lots of things about her, like, not knowing what things are, and they go to visit one of the princess's aunt, and at some point they kind of convey that the aunt is her dad's sister, and she's like, wait, your aunt is your dad's sister? It's like, yes, do you not know what an aunt is? He's like, no, I was just hoping it'd become clear in conversation eventually. And at one point she's trying to figure out how to use her powers to save a forest, I think, and she's just kind of waggling the sword around, and a bunch of random stuff happens, like it shoots a rainbow and then a lightning blast, and it turns a horse into a Pegasus, and she's like, well, that's not what I meant to do.
But awesome. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I've got a sweet new Pegasus.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The horse's name is Horsey, until they meet someone who can talk to horses, and he's like, his name is actually Wind Breath or something.
You know what I named one of my horses in Red Dead?
Horse.
Horsey 2 Horse.
Nice.
And then I got another horse, and so I named it Horsey 3 Horse.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I think I named one of mine only one, and then I accidentally killed it.
You know you can bring them back, right?
Yeah, except if you get killed right after your horse.
Yeah, that'll happen. Yeah, not a good sign, that.
Had to go back and find my saddle, get all my stuff back.
Mm.
She-Ra, really good, modern take. Strong female characters, queer as shit, excellent color scheme, great animation. And the thing that really impressed me that I didn't know about the series going in was it is helmed by Noelle Stevenson, who is a cartoonist who... did a really cool webcomic years and years and years ago that I enjoyed at the time, and then also made Lumberjanes, which is Boom Studios. It's a comic about a bunch of girls at a summer camp for adventurous ladies where they meet mythical creatures in the forest and defeat them by making friends and stuff. It's just cute.
Friendship will defeat Galvatron.
Yeah.
Just remember
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I've been up to. Have you been up to anything else? Or should we move on to news?
Before we started recording tonight, while I was waiting for you to get home, I played the first kind of like prologue mission of Hitman 2, because I've been way too dedicated to Red Dead to actually play any of Hitman. And it's in this, like, you're on a New Zealand beach, and this is like this, you know, one of those ridiculous and wanky, like, rich person architecture porn houses on the beach. And you go in, you're spying for stuff. And it just made me laugh because you find, you know, you've got to find documents. So you find a secret room. And in the secret room is basically just like every weapon you could want. There's like a ninja sword, like an MP5, a shotgun, like ninja stars. Just like everything. And there's knives through all the kitchen. You can basically in that one level just pick up and experiment with every weapon or every weapon type.
Nice.
And it just made me kind of laugh. It's just like, yep, this is the prologue. This is the one that gives you like the fun times, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like fuck around in this tiny little map. Where the stakes don't mean sweet fuck all. It just made me laugh, but it was very fun. It was a little prologue. So I'm going to play more of that when I don't go back and try and 100% complete Red Dead, because I did it with GTA 5, so I've got to do it with Red Dead.
Mm.
But also, fuck the achievement where you have to be attacked and survive and then kill the bear that attacks you 18 times.
What?
Of all the fucking achievements that are out there that you could have done in that game, that's one of them. And it's like, I've been attacked by Beth exactly 3 times. 2 of them were required by mission, and one of them was just because I've seen that one type of bear once outside of a mission, and it attacked me, and I didn't know what happened, and I was dead. Because it doesn't tell you how to fight off the bear until you're fighting it, and then you're like, holy fuck, I'm being like attacked by a bear, and don't read the little things that pop up for like a second to tell you how to fight the bear. So that's 18 a real...
18
times. Fuck you, Rockstar. That's bullshit.
No, fuck that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I don't care about achievements.
I mean, if I'm 100%, I got to. So, we'll see.
Have fun
that. I'll drink a bunch of my homebrew beer and just get tanked and do it.
That'll definitely help you survive
of the which, bear. Today's beer is actually pretty good. It's got a bit of a cidery taste to it still, but very drinkable. It's only going to get better. Fingers crossed, hopefully.
Well, unless you drink it all before it gets better.
No, there's plenty of bottles left. We had like 28 of the long neck bottles made. That's the beauty of homebrew. But I've got a sweet sweet Irish stout brewing at the moment. It's just sitting there with some brown sugar in there. I'll drink that in 6 months' time.
Well, that's good. Shall we move on to news then?
The news.
Yes, let's go through it quickly because we've been talking for half an hour already.
A classic, patented, quickfire news.
Yeah, because honestly, there's not much to talk about this week.
No, there's not.
So, working in order of, I wrote them down this order.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I think there was a teaser released for the next big DC TV crossover event, Elseworlds, for Batwoman. So the first time seeing her in motion, it looks decent.
For all, like, maybe 2 seconds, you see her in motion, and it's all poorly lit, and...
Yeah, it's very Batman-y.
She looks like Batwoman.
Yeah, the only thing I'm not sure about is the wig looks bad.
Well,
it's not a good wig.
Well, her hair is not what you would call real-life appropriate or applicable hair in the first place.
No, it actually is. Like, she has Kate Kane's hair. Kate Kane wears a wig to be Batwoman. That's part of her character. But... this looks like a wig. Also, it's made to very dramatically cascade across one eye, which looks great, but it also looks like she just put her wig on crooked.
Her
wig on crooked, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll wait to see what it's like when she's actually talking and acting, if it just turns out that there's Ruby Rose in cosplay, I'm just going to be like, well, what about the other characters that are interesting? What about Flash that's not Flash and Arrow that's not Arrow?
Yeah, what's that about? Like, they've swapped lives.
But only those two. Everyone else is fine. What a wacky change that is.
And Supergirl is fine because she's from a different Earth or something. And it's an event that only happens on their world. But
you got to love those, like, technicalities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Comics.
I'll watch the shit out of it, though, because I haven't watched the last season, but I watched the event from last season.
Yeah, I really want to get caught up. Like, Arrow's on Netflix now. Legends of Tomorrow I'll have to track down. Flash I actually finished. Supergirl I didn't. Which I think is on Stan, maybe?
I don't know.
I need to catch up and then catch up on the 8 episodes or whatever it'll be before they get into the crossover event. Because I am so behind on all TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's coming up. Mm-hmm. December in other DC... news.
10th year.
There is a title has been revealed for the Birds of Prey movie, which is not just Birds of Prey. It is officially...
you need to have like a ridiculous name with a subtitle and...
exactly.
And a colon in there. Otherwise it's not a movie.
Not a colon. Brackets. the official title of the movie is Birds of Prey.
Who? Like, who's a featuring? Some famous rapper? Exhibit.
You're not actually Jay-Z. Far off. Birds of Prey, bracket, and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, close bracket.
What the fuck is that?
That is the official title of the movie.
Drop all that shit, Birds of Prey, that's all you need. The rest of it is junk.
See, this was revealed by Margot Robbie, who plays Harley Quinn, posting a photo on Instagram of the front page of her script where it says Birds of Prey, and then in sort of pen underneath, it's added, and the Fabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Right.
And a kiss on it. So everyone just assumed it was a joke for a character, but then DC came out and said, no, that's the actual title of the movie.
That is fucking terrible.
I know. And I love it.
This is why we don't like you, DC.
They also released the final trailer for Aquaman, which looks pretty good.
Now, I've been lied to before, especially when it comes to DC. But it looks like it could be pretty good.
It looks like it could be vaguely comedic.
I liked the whole, like, you already got one of those.
Line. Yeah, pointing at his
and then the camera, trident. Like, comically shifts to it as well. Yeah, it's like, that was pretty,
like,
funny.
The magical trident of the king. And it's like, yeah, I got one. Whoop. Yeah, so it looks like it has the possibility of being a slightly lighter
that
movie.
That was Willem Dafoe, wasn't it, in that?
Yes, Willem Dafoe is fucking, like, the guy who raised him.
They've stolen our old man Joker. Fuck you, DC. This is why we don't like you.
Well, they're already going to end up with two Jokers, so why not another?
Yeah, but this, I feel like this is like kind of a major character. They can't just come back from that.
Mm.
But I mean, it's DC, the DC movie universe, so who the fuck knows?
Really don't care. No. Yeah, so that kind of just changed all the DC news together. There was also a trailer for a Marvel property, Once Upon a Deadpool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but no, which... but it's not really a Marvel movie. It's a Marvel licensed by Fox movie. That's a joke if you've seen the reference to the Sweet trailer, if you've seen it.
Yeah, so everyone thought it was a joke when they said they were going to make a PG-13 version of Deadpool 2. It's not. They've refilmed some scenes and made it less violent and added a framing device where Deadpool is telling a story at Christmas to Fred Savage, who is duct taped to a bed.
Yeah. There's something like 15 to 20 minutes worth of like new stuff that's going to be in there, which I hope they also do some really like bad CGI over some of the stuff as well. So don't cut it out. That would be
amazing, yeah.
But yeah, like put like a really bad like rotoscoping like drawing over it and stuff like that. Because they've had the like cartoon characters in the first Deadpool.
That's right, when he got brain damaged.
Yeah, so like why not throw a bit of that in there? Like that kind of thing would be fun. A friend at work said that he hopes that this doesn't catch on and then like other companies try and do this exact same thing.
No.
I said like hopefully they're smart enough to realize that this is something that really only Deadpool can do.
Yes.
It doesn't work unless it's got his like shtick on it. Like it doesn't work unless you're like making fun of yourself with like a fourth wall break type deal. Because yeah, it just won't work. So don't try it, other people. Only Deadpool can try it.
Don't do it.
No.
Yeah, like I wasn't sure about this, but now I'm kind of keen to see it.
Yeah. The more I find out about it, the funnier it is. And if it even gets to like cinemas here, I might even go to the cinema to see it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's like a 2-week limited engagement and it starts on my birthday. So
oh, right on.
That's good to know.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What else did we have? Oh, more interesting to me than you maybe, but Kingdom Hearts 3 got a new trailer this week as part of their confirmation that the game has gone gold. It is finished. It is being printed to discs.
Don't lie. It's not finished. Day one patch.
Oh, there'll be a day one patch, yeah. But the game is considered finished.
In a state that they can get away with releasing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
The animation in that game looks amazing. I'm really impressed with it, matching like the Pixar style for Tangled and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's been like 400 years since the last one, hasn't it?
It has.
And about 20 different editions of the old games.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to finish Birth by Sleep in that HD remix that I got, so that I know what happened there. But also, I have a video bookmarked on YouTube, which is the history of Kingdom Hearts. It is 36 minutes long. So I'm going to get through that at some point, just to remember what the fuck is going on. Other than that... Oh, two little tidbits about one Fallout 76. Well, three things. Surprise, it's buggy as shit.
I mean, would it be like a Bethesda game if it wasn't buggy as shit?
It would not.
Mm.
One thing I found interesting was that players work together, because one of the big moves you can make in the game is launch nukes, so you can wipe out other settlements and stuff.
I think I've heard this being used.
Yes, three... like enough players got together to coordinate three simultaneous nuke strikes in the same map or instance of the world, and it crashed the server.
When I read that, my immediate thought was, why the fuck would you allow multiple nukes to go off? Why would you not have a thing like once one's gone off and once in progress, it locks it down and no more attempts can be made until like that's done and it's like effectively a cooldown so that you can't have multiples at once? That seems like a massive oversight.
And if you are going to allow multiple nuke strikes or not prevent multiple nuke strikes, maybe test how it works if they happen at the same time.
Surely someone in a meeting went, all right, what if someone sets off 10 at a time? Now, I know that a manager in that meeting went, no one will do that. But fuck you, of course someone will do it.
Have you met gamers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever anyone says like, oh, no, that won't happen, take that as a fact that that will happen and it will happen straight away. As soon as possibly it can happen, that will happen.
Gamers will do anything. Literally, on my way home tonight, I was listening to a favorite podcast of mine, BigSoftTitty.png, which is the comedy podcast Tom Walker and Demi Lardner do to remind everyone that they're a couple and terrible, but they were talking about Fallout 76 because Demi's been playing it. Demi's is a weird little gremlin of a person. First thing she wanted to do when she built her home, or base, or whatever they call it in this, was surround her house in basketball nets facing inward so they could watch her. Sure. Couldn't do that. So instead she just put a bunch of pictures of boats up in her house, and then every time she met a player, she would tell them about her house and how she had all these pictures of boats on the wall of her house because they're her ex-wives. And then gave everyone her guns. So literally you can't predict what anyone's going to do in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And what you should predict is literally everything can happen, mm-hmm. such as three nuke strikes at once.
What do you know could possibly break a server? Don't let people do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them do it, but to a measured amount.
But you know what? Maybe they're not too worried about it having that big of an effect because they don't expect that many players. Because guess what? Fallout 76, in its first week, sold 80% less copies than Fallout 4.
Well, yeah, but I don't think 80%. this game was one of those. I feel like this is a mid-step game. So like, yeah, this is the game, yes, until we get the next big one. So they weren't expecting like massive numbers. But
that is a huge drop. Like, even just trading on the Fallout franchise. Like, I came close to buying Fallout 76 just because I like the world. And despite the fact that it has no NPCs and I have to play with other people, I was considering it just so I'd have a place to explore and I could fight cryptids. But 80% fewer copies. That is huge. And good, because don't let them make this a thing. I want my single-player Fallout experience.
What I bet you're going to get is you're going to get, like, GTA Online or Red Dead Online, you're going to get Fallout, you get your single player experience, and then there'll be this like thing you can keep playing in. I bet.
That's fine. That can be a separate thing to my
single player campaign. This is the tech demo to that, I bet you.
Well, it's okay. They're working on the new Elder Scrolls at the moment.
They're working on a new Bethesda. Fallout. They're just not going to tell you they're working on a new Fallout.
It's not going to come out for 20 years, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that. Last bit of news I have. So everyone got excited earlier this week because Steam announced they were finally going to be listing games in AU prices.
I wouldn't say excited.
Well, everyone was relieved that it was finally happening.
Everyone basically pulled up their chair, got their popcorn and their beer and went, let's see what happens now.
Can't wait to see how this turns out.
Like, how are they going to fuck us this time?
And, oh boy, did they fuck. So, historically, for as long as Steam has been a thing that's been available in Australia, developers have had the option to set a separate price for separate regions. So they could set their primary price for the US market and then say, and it's worth this many Australian dollars, at which point Steam would just convert that to USD and display that price to us. Which is why sometimes we'd have a game sort of go up on Steam as, you know, $49 US, and then suddenly it would jump to $89 US here.
When everyone went like, shit, that's a great price in Australia. And they're like, oh shit, we can scout people more money. Let's put it up.
Yes. So that's always been a feature that they can do, just not visible in AU dollars. So they've now made it so it will display in AU dollars. But what they also did was wipe all the existing AU prices. So even if a developer had historically set an AU region price, it's gone. So they had to reset it. And that means that today, or overnight, when the Steam changeover happened and AUD started showing up, there's a shit ton of games that you just can't buy in Australia anymore because they haven't set an AU price. And it's a lot of big titles too, like everything by Konami is unavailable right now, or was when I looked at it this morning. What was it? Like a number of titles that I've been looking at, sort of waiting to go on sale, are just not buyable. And some of the ones that have shown up have been massively jacked up in price because Steam had like a recommended price range for games. And I guess some devs just went for that. So there's games that have jumped like $40, $50, $60 in price. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's going to be one of those things. Like, some games will come down a little bit because they're charged, like their US dollars was always very high. Some games will, like, where it's going to affect games is the games that came out that were, like, set as, like, $49 or $59 US, they're actually quite a good price.
Yeah.
When they'll jack up then to, like, $90. Australian.
Yeah.
So, like, some will go up, some will go down. It'll even out. It was always going to be horrible to start. I'm trying to reserve judgment now because it will even out. And, like, when people actually realize what an Australian price is, like, it will take developers and publishers and stuff a bit of time to, I think, work the kinks out. Once they go, like, once they see that their sales go, like, nosedive, and they go, like, why is this happening? It's like, well, you know, you set the price, like, $40 above what they normally would be, right?
And this is the thing I'm hoping is going forwards as games are listed on Steam, it had better be a requirement to set a price for other regions as opposed to an option. Because if they don't set a price for us, we don't get the game.
I think they will be doing it. It's just that because it was a swap over, like, overnight, a lot of publishers were like, oh, shit, it's happened. Like, what do we do? Like, how do we set it? They don't.
Yeah.
They either didn't realize what was happening and have to, like, scramble to do it. I think it'll be all right. You just got to give it a couple of weeks. Yeah. To actually, like, even out.
It'll be fine. Because we're coming up on the Christmas sales. I need these games to be available if I'm going to buy them.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty shit if they haven't updated it by then. But I'm imagining that most of the prices of the big stuff will be fixed within a week.
They better be.
They'll just look at it and go, like, we can't really afford not to.
Yeah, because what was the ones I saw? So, Everything by Konami. Night in the Woods, which I spotted because it's a game I like. Undertale isn't available. And Warhammer Vermintide, which people noticed because it's currently like a deal of the week or whatever on Steam. And so it shows up. It's like, deal of the week. You can't have it.
I already got it, but you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. Steam, you tried. But you know what you should have just done? Just kept the prices you already had listed.
Yeah, then make it up to the developers to actually, like, change it if they want to.
And, hey, you know, if they haven't set a price, just convert the existing US price to AU dollars and leave it at that.
Send them an email going, like, this is the thing that's happened. It's on you now.
If you want to adjust the price to make more money, you can do it. But otherwise, we'll just do this automatically because it's the lowest effort system, which is what a giant online store should want.
But, yeah, that was the thing. We'll see how that pans out in the next few weeks. I got one more bit of news though.
Oh yes, what do you have?
So a little game you might have heard of, Half-Life 2.
Oh yeah, okay, I know.
Came out like a ways ago now. But before that, there was a game called Half-Life 1. And then in about 2004, I think it was, some guys got together and went, "Fuck it, well, let's put Half-Life 1 into Half-Life 2 and remake that shit." And they did, and it was awesome. It's called Black Mesa.
Yes.
And now Black Mesa today released a trailer for Zen because they left the last bit out because it sucked.
Yes.
And
so
fuck, does Black it Mesa look good?
Went from early access to like an actual release, but it was like part one. So it ended where the game would have moved into the Zen section with the weird gravity and the poor level design.
Yeah, it was just it derailed the game. It was all about like it was effectively like 3D platforming most of it. It was junk.
And it wasn't good 3D platforming either.
No, it was just tedious. It was boring.
They released
a trailer and it looked good. It looks real good.
The world looks like way prettier than I remember Black Mesa being when I played the part one. But yeah, they're saying early next year, I think.
Quarter 2, 2019. But when I first found out about this, I immediately signed up and I've seen about 10 different versions of their website. I've been watching it since the start. And I'm really looking forward to finishing off Half-Life 1 in Half-Life 2.
Half-Life 2 and a half at this point with the Source Engine, I think.
Well, yeah. So it looks really, really nice. It looks, like, trippy as hell. It's still, it's got a bunch of, like, the weird, like, testicle monsters there.
I did appreciate that the testicle monster now has physics to its alien testicle.
Yeah. It's not just a weird, like, animation that plays no matter what's happening to it.
It sways and jiggles and gyrates.
It looks really, really fun and good, and I can't wait for it.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I saw that this morning or yesterday, I think, and sort of watched and was like, oh yeah, I'll play that in like a year.
So when it comes out, because you can now buy it, I think. It's like a mod you can buy.
You've been able to buy it for ages, yeah.
Yeah, because they for a few years, but I managed to grab it before it was a paid one.
Oh, yeah.
So I've still got it installed. I've never uninstalled it since. I've always kept it.
Wise choice.
But when Zen comes out, I might actually like pony up for some cash for it.
Yeah. I think at that point, it's been long enough since Half-Life 1. to justify essentially repaying for the experience. Yeah. It's a remaster, essentially.
Yeah. And yeah, it looks good, and I can't wait.
Well, yeah, that's about all I've got.
Yeah, I got nothing else.
Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in for your weekly dose of The Indoorsman, your podcast guide to the great indoors that we make for you, and not just as an excuse to talk to each other.
I thought it was just an excuse to talk to each other, which is doubly important now that we live in different cities.
Yeah, no, we want them to think we love them.
Ah, got it right, yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. If you like our opening and closing music, it is Fuck Sidechain Compression on Game Boy by Rocco W. You can go to Bandcamp as a main place, but various other places that music artists post their stuff. It's good. Chiptune type stuff.
It is good. It
came up on MP3 player like yesterday.
Nice.
Hmm.
The only thing I've been playing music-wise for the past week straight is that League of Legends music video, which has some insanely good animation.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've been listening to the new music album, which is growing on me. That 80s synth, yo.
Literally, Cliff and everybody else, go and look up on YouTube KDA Popstar. It is a Korean pop group that did a song for League of Legends' big event that was recently, and it's animated with, like, punk versions of the characters from the game. I don't know League of Legends, but it is a very good music video. It does all the things that real life ones wish they could do if it wasn't so impossible.
You're not really selling it to me.
It's got cool black light effects. Just do it. You can find us online at indoorsmanpodcast.com after you go watch that music video, or The Indoorsman on Facebook, where you can tell us how much you liked that music video, at indoorsmanpod on Twitter and Instagram, where you can tweet or send photos of how much you enjoyed that music video, and I guess talk to us about the podcast as well, if you want.
I mean, if you're with me and you don't give a shit, you can tweet at me, at Cliff and Monkey. Or if, I guess, if you care about what Matt says, you can tweet at him, at Ponk, on Twitter. Or if you want to really just, like, blast home how much you don't care about that video clip, you can email us at contact@indoorsmanpodcast.com.
Wow, W-O-W, wow. We'd also love it if you could subscribe.
LOL review. Is League of Legends. Not WoW. WoW's World of Warcraft.
Gosh. Subscribe, review, rate the show on iTunes, podcast, Podbean, Stitcher, all those good things. Do it.
And this guy who apparently loves K-pop video clips has been Matt.
I actually do. I watched a bunch of them afterwards, and they're all about just doing the cool thing, which is so much better than the shitty story-based music videos that Western music does these days. He's been Cliff.
Well, I think that's a depends on the video clip. There's always trash in video clips, and there's always gold.
Oh, always is. By endorsement tradition, we'll send you off by saying I'm gonna go play more Pokemon. Let's go.
Time for Red Dead 2.
Go watch Popstar by KDA. It's really good.
No.
Do it.
No. I'm stopping recording.
End of podcast.